In one of the earliest teachings that I came across that very much inspired me and probably attracted me to this path, was when the Buddha said that this is a path of happiness leading to the highest happiness, and that the highest happiness is peace. I thought, this sounds good. And then I sat on a cushion. It still sounded good, but it didn't seem to be quite the texture of my own experience, where it often felt to be really quite an uphill climb. And there was a curiosity for me about, you know, I certainly had apparently the requisites in place, you know, I had a sense of aspiration, the willingness to make skillful effort and put in the time, you know, I certainly felt inspired. And yet, what happened that when I sat on a cushion, you know, I would fall asleep or just get lost or forget what I was doing? And it became a kind of koan for me. You know, the path of happiness leading to the highest happiness. You know, it becomes a sort of koan. Why can there be such a seeming discrepancy or divide between our aspirations and our willingness and our felt experience when we meditate? In other words, what makes it so hard? You know, is it because we're personally particularly incompetent, or is it because we don't have the sort of right background, or, you know, what is it that makes it so hard? And then we talk to others and we realize, oh yes, other people find this quite challenging too. And the question arises, what is it that gets in the way? What is it that, although I have heard it said that it's only the first 20 years that are difficult, and after that it becomes much easier. And by the way, there's some truth in that. But what is it that gets in the way? You know, and of course we could have a long stories about that, you know, and you know, our life and our backgrounds and our personalities and our circumstances. We could have very, very long stories about it. But sometimes I think it's simpler than that. And I think there's a certain tension between intention and impulse. You know, so the Buddha says, you know, that the whole of this path rests upon the head of the pin of intention. And in terms of Buddhist psychology, the list of skillful intentions is really, really short. You know, it's kindness, compassion, and non-clinging. What is this tension between intention and impulse? And I do think that one of the ways that impulse comes much more into the territory of habit patterns, you know. And we're not just talking about, you know, external outer habit patterns about, you know, how we put on our shoes or make our beds. You know, we're talking about psychological, emotional habit patterns. And we actually see that impulse in the form of these habit patterns are actually the saboteurs of intention. They sabotage intention. And again, we could give a very, very long and detailed list of impulses. But impulse is basically, it's not an act of will very often. It's mostly quite unconscious, isn't it? It's a kind of unconscious reactivity. It's an unaware, unmindful reactivity. And again, although we could make a very long, detailed list of all of these impulses, they're mostly encapsulated within the list of the five hindrances. You know, and, you know, in the old days, long, long ago, I used to talk about the hindrances as something that happened at the beginning of retreats, and if you're a good meditator, you'll get over them, and your practice will really begin. I have considerably revised that view, I can tell you. Because I see the five hindrances as being the primary embodiment of impulse and the primary embodiment of unconsciousness. You know, and if you go through the list, you know, of craving for sensual pleasure, you know, how much that really sabotages the intention to be present with what is in a kind, compassionate, non-clinging way. How much it accounts for so much of our distractedness and our busyness and our prowling, you know. We just want to be comfortable all the time, and we really don't want to be uncomfortable. Very human, we would say, and one level it is. But it does become something of a compulsion, doesn't it? You know, you see, you know, have I got the right cushion? Have I got the right cup? You know, have I got the right tea bag? Have I got the right plate? You know, have I got the right thing I want to eat for lunch? Have I got the right weather system? You know, have I got the right body? You know, it's a kind of this persistent push, isn't it, to actually make our world okay, you know? And this other side of aversion, you know, when we're not in the craving for a sensual pleasure, you know, the nice thoughts, the nice sensations, the nice fantasies, we're in this opposite of how do I sort of annihilate and get away from anything that's at all uncomfortable. Again, think of the sabotaging effect of that, you know, our intolerance for discomfort. Again, something very human about it. You know, not to be condemned and not to be judged, but it turns into that compulsion or impulse which is constantly checking out every moment for what I need to fix or rearrange or get away from or make different than it is, you know. Sloth and torpor is a very popular saboteur, you know. We sit down and our chin is on our chest. It was hardly the intention we brought to that moment. You know, sloth and torpor is not just about falling asleep. It's about numbness. It's about not feeling. It's our favorite dissociative mechanism, is to somehow get into this kind of daze, you know, where things don't actually touch us. Things don't actually touch us. Sometimes it's not even unpleasant, you know. It's a kind of dreaminess, you know. And the bell goes, and you think that city went by so quickly, you know. This is a kind of dreaminess, you know. But it's a remoteness from life. You know? Agitation and worry is one of the big favorites, you know. Rumination, obsession, you know, repetitive thinking, you know, agitated bodies, agitated minds. And of course, when none of these mechanisms work to actually make the present moment okay for us, we get into doubt. Can't do it, I'm a failure. You know, I think so much of the path, you know, and actually if you look at Buddhist psychology, the five hindrances are the five manifestations of greed, hatred, and delusion. You know, and greed, hatred, and delusion are the three manifestations of confusion or bewilderment. You know, so it's actually not quite really, they're not really quite a small thing. But if you look at any moment, and I really encourage this as an investigation, any moment where you found that you've kind of really strayed from your intention, just check it out. Check the landscape. Are any of these impulse states actually operating? And I think it would be very, very hard and quite challenging to find any moment where we depart from our intentions to not find these one of these or multiple of these actually operating. You know, and in terms of Buddhist psychology, you know, these are to be understood. These are really to be seen for what they are, as saboteurs. Saboteurs of intention, saboteurs of aspiration, and deeply rooted habit patterns in the human psyche. Yeah? Deeply rooted habit patterns probably go right back to, you know, when we were in caves trying to get the fire lit. You know, deeply rooted habit patterns in the human psyche, but not exempt from change. Not exempt from change. And actually it is one of the characteristics of nibbana or liberation. It's that the hindrance factors are inoperative. They are inoperative. They no longer have any hold. They no longer have any ground from which to arise. So I just like to encourage you, you know, I think it's a really, you know, I'm a great fan of having you know, some investigative edges in our life, you know, where we actually sort of probe things about. I think this path is much more than just sitting with our eyes closed, you know. It is about understanding. And I think sometimes having these sort of investigative edges, you know, not just for the cushion, but for our life, are really, really useful, you know, to really have a sense of when we move from intention to impulse. And what it is to return back to intention and what we're returning from and how much intention is present in our day, because one of the things that the five hindrances do is they make us forgetful. They just make us forget about intention. So it's just an interesting investigative edge, and it certainly is a useful one in the sittings and in the walkings, you know, when we start with an intention. And how long does it sustain? How long does it sustain? And then where is it gone? Where is it gone? What's taken its place? And I think the thing that we do discover about intention, of course, that intention is not just a thought, it's a commitment. It's a commitment, it's a dedication. And I think the one thing we discover about intention, we don't just make them once. We reset and reset and remember. And it's that part of mindfulness, that part of sati, which is about remembering our dedication, remembering what we are committed to in any moment of experience. So let's take some time to sit with a clear sense of knowing what the sitting is dedicated to.